Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode 4, The Usual Suspects. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Remaker's Mark Podcast. This is Episode 4. Today, we are discussing The Usual Suspects. With me again are the usual cast of suspects, pun fully sort of intended. With me today is Andy Wicks. Andy, Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth?
I am a devoted Hagar fan.
I think I might be with you there. I'm not sure. Jeremy Nilsson, what about you? Hagar or David Lee Roth?
Phil Hartman is my favorite.
Oh, Phil Hartman. That's bold. I've always appreciated his high leg kicks. Lee Hagerschnarg. What are you, Hagar or David Lee Roth?
Attitude, Roth, songwriting, Hagar.
Ooh, interesting. Hmm. How about hair?
Roth.
Hmm, good
really?
Call.
Really? Fading Glory, Roth?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Interesting. And last but not least, Mark Josting. Sharon?
I think I'm going to have to go Sharon.
Bold. And last but not least, Mark, I wanted you to call this My Sharona, creepy, good, or both?
Both.
Ah, correct.
Decidedly both.
Good answer. Good answer. So in addition to those fine gentlemen, my name is Kyle Delahunt, and I will be your host today on the Remaker's Mark podcast. We've got a couple things before we dive into our discussion of The Usual Suspects. First, we want to thank our friends at Tipsy Pixels for their promotional consideration. Tipsy Pixels is a monthly retro video game contest held at the Triple Rock Social Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's hosted by Nels Lenz of Huge Theater. The next event is February 3rd. Doors and casual gaming start at 7, and the tournament starts at 8, and the game is Super Smash Brothers for Nintendo 64. So that should be a darn fine time. There are drink specials from Tallgrass Brewing. Players can win retro games and systems from Level Up Games, as well as free show tickets from the Triple Rock and free drinks as well. If you'd like to find out more, check them out at tipsypixels.com or find them on Twitter at twitter.com/tipsypixels. So thank you to Tipsy Pixels for their support as always. So before we start on The Usual Suspects, just a couple things I want to mention. Just a reminder that all of our shows are available on iTunes now, both this podcast, The Remaker's Mark Podcast, and our other property, the Nerd Night Minnesota Podcast, are available on iTunes. So if you want to go to mathishard.net, there are links to that there, as well as links to RSS feeds where you can subscribe in your podcatcher of choice. If you do happen to subscribe on iTunes, or even if you don't and you just want to send us a little love, we'd love for you to rate the show on iTunes and leave feedback there. That helps us know how we're doing. It helps give visibility to the show so that if someone checks us out and sees a lot of 5-star ratings there, they know that it's good stuff, which we're trying to provide for you. So if you would be willing to do that, that would be great. Also, on mathishard.net, you can find show notes for each episode. We put information about all of the actors and actresses we discuss. We talk about other movies here, and so we provide links to those that we might discuss in our various movie discussions. So hit us up at mathishard.net, and if you want to provide feedback too about how we're doing outside of that iTunes venue, or if you have any questions or thoughts on the contact us page at mathishard.net, you can reach out to us there. So definitely provide feedback. We always love to hear that. So today we are discussing The Usual Suspects. This is part one of our discussion where we'll be talking about recasting the film. The Usual Suspects was made in 1995, which seems like a long time ago, but yet not at the very same time. Wow, that's crazy. It was directed by Brian Singer. Brian has made many quality movies, including Apt Pupil, the first two X-Men movies, as well as Superman Returns. This movie was nominated for dozens of awards in 1995, and it won Oscars for Best Supporting Actor by Kevin Spacey and Best Screenplay by Christopher McQuarrie. Jared, you want to talk a little bit about your history with The Usual Suspects?
Well, The Usual Suspects is one of those movies that for a time, maybe even still today, it seems like it's always on cable, on your USA, your TBSs, and so forth, if I'm allowed to say those things. But so I would always be flipping through late at night looking for something to have on as background noise and inevitably catch The Usual Suspects in the middle and would always end up watching it to the end. And it dawned on me not so very long ago that I had never actually seen the beginning of it. And it's one of my favorite movies. So I finally sat down and watched the whole thing from beginning to end, the real version, not with commercials and so on. And not that it didn't make sense before, because obviously with the ending being what it is, it all sort of ties together. But without the beginning part, the ending always didn't make complete sense to me. And so I finally watched the beginning and realized, how have I not seen this yet all these times? And how have I made it through this movie without having seen this and still have it make sense and still be such a good movie? So I now can proudly say I've seen The Usual Suspects all the way through.
Well done.
17 years later.
Exactly.
Indeed. Cool. Thanks, Jer. So as usual, in the first part of our episodes, we're going to be talking about how we would recast The Usual Suspects. So we're going to talk about a few major characters, a few minor characters. Before we go into that, we do have something that's a little bit different than usual. Our good friend and panelist, Andy Wicks, and his family have been under the weather a bit. So Andy is not going to be providing picks today, but he is going to be acting in the role of judge. Now, Andy is usually pretty judgy. We come to expect that of him. But in this time, we're actually giving him full-on endorsement as a judge / judger. So he will not be providing picks, but that's just fine. We're happy to hear that you're feeling well and that everybody's doing better. And we look forward to hearing how you judge us and probably make us cry. But that's just part of the role here at Remakers, Mark. We gotta be prepared for that. So
the fluid has sapped my strength but honed my judginess.
Excellent. I look forward to it, and then just having a good soft cry later. Be a good time. Someone referred to it as an ugly cry, like a really heavy cry, and I just thought that was fantastic. I think they were talking about being in their car and having an ugly cry.
If you can combine sobbing and guffawing, that's what you'll be doing.
Guffawing.
Guffawing. I love it.
All right. So the first character we're going to be discussing is the role of Todd Hockney, as played by Kevin Pollak. Jer, tell us about Hockney.
Yes, sorry about that. So Todd Hockney is one of the group of The Usual Suspects. He's a little bit of a loner. He seems to be kind of wisecracker of sarcastic remarks. Kevin Pollak, who played him originally, is a former stand-up comedian, and you can see a lot of that timing, I think, in his role and how he jabs at pretty much everybody, especially McManus and Verbal. But he's quick-witted, he's sharp, but he's also seems to be pretty loyal to the group and to what they're doing. He's not going to be the one to betray them or run off or anything. But yeah, I think he's also kept his guard up. He seems to be kind of somebody who's self-assured in that he can get himself out of there if he needs to. So Kevin Pollak, I think, did a really good job with him. And I really liked what he brought to that character with just the timing and the wit of that comedian, but still being very serious and very much a somebody that I wouldn't really want to mess with in a dark alley situation. With that being said, I wanted to find somebody who had a similar style, a similar wit that could trade barbs and be sarcastic, but could also hold their own if it came down to a straight up yelling match or whatever. So I went with Casey Affleck.
Oh, very nice.
Or yep. Casey Affleck.
Affleck. Interesting. Brother of recent Golden Globe winner, several Golden Globe winner, Ben Affleck.
Yes.
And fine actor on his own end.
Yeah, I really like Casey. I loved him in Gone Baby Gone, and also just his goofiness in the Ocean's movies, Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. Mm-hmm. I could picture a combination of those two characters and just being kind of somebody who's kind of on the fringe and snipping at everybody else, but also has got a little bit of a hard edge to him because he is, this hardened criminal, this guy that somehow found himself in this lineup of thugs.
I could see that sort of like crazy glint in his eye that I think Todd Hockney would have.
Right, right.
Yep, definitely. I think of the line when he's in the being interrogated, and they said, "We can put you in Queens in the night of the murder." He's like, "Really? I live in Queens. Got a team of monkeys on that?" I can hear Casey Affleck just doing that perfectly. That's one of my favorite lines in the movie.
Todd Hockney. I know you. Good with explosives. You don't think without a doubt, the one guy who didn't give a fuck about anybody.
You guys don't have a fucking leg to stand on.
You think so, tough guy?
I could put you in Queens on the night of the hijacking.
Really? I live in Queens. Did you put that together yourself, Einstein? What, you got a team of monkeys working around the clock on this?
I love
you
know that. Really?
I can see, I like the pick. I like the, I can see why you went there, Jer, very much. But for me, he seems to lack that hard edge that Kevin Pollak has in spades. That, I don't know, that he always kind of has that baby face a little bit. I don't know. There's something about him that doesn't seem hard edged to me. But I think apart from that, he definitely has the wit and the attitude, perhaps. I don't know. There's some piece to it that's missing for me, but I like it.
Well, that's why I like I really liked his character in Gone Baby Gone, because he did have a little bit more of that. It was a more serious role. It was a more intense role, and I think he brought some of that out of him.
Jerry, let me put it this way: you're currently in first place.
Yes. Well, all right. Everybody's got to climb from here. So, Mark, who do you have?
Well, I went with a fine young man named Adam Scott. People will recognize him mostly from the TV show Parks and Rec, but he's had several prominent roles, such as in Our Idiot Brother and Step Brothers. Well, I gotta say, I was, even though I hated the movie, I think the, my favorite, well, not my favorite role of his, but the role that entertains me most, was in one of the Hellraiser movies.
Hmm. Wow. Really?
Yeah, really. And he's just about the leadingest of the lead roles. It's very strange, and I think I get the feeling that he was just the best actor that they could find.
I like his line from when he in this character in Step Brothers, where he lifts up his shirt to show his glistening six pack, and he's like, "I haven't had a carb in 8 years." That's funny.
Yeah, I loved him in Step Brothers. He was just such a dick.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so
I still haven't seen that. I need to.
Oh man, it is
so yeah, good, totally worth man. It. But yeah,
and
I mean,
so,
he's
so completely the opposite in Parks and Rec, where he's just this nerdy, doofy, really smart accountant.
Yeah, yeah. But he's very sarcastic in most of the things that he does, and I can see him being able to, you know, to do the thing that Hockney does, where he sits back and just kind of, you know, snips and quips. But then also I think he could hold his own. Like he's definitely has a backbone. So I think Adam Scott brings all that.
I like it. I think my pick as well, which we'll get to in a couple here, is like, I think people need to give the opportunity or be given the opportunity to go outside of what they're often cast for. I think there are so many great personalities that they get picked for who they are and then they end up that way. And some of that is due to a lack of range, vis-a-vis Seth Rogen. But like some of them, it's just because they had one character that was like that. And then just ended up not doing anything like that. And I think you should give them a chance to really, to kind of go outside of that. I think of like Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, which certainly had components of his energy and his manicness. But that performance is one of my favorite of all time. I just think he's astounding in that. And, you know, to be given a chance to do that, I think you have to take those risks both as an actor and as a casting agent or a director to do that. So, yeah, I think, you know, my choice is very similar to that in that, you know, it's not exactly who they've been, but I think it's someone that they could be and that they're talented enough to just like go for it and make that happen.
Well, and I think that one of the things with this movie, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, or just poor directing by Bryan Singer, but I don't think that any one of these characters was cast to be a specific stereotype or this person, this thug is supposed to be like this. So play him this way. I think the actors were given, it seemed to be the actors sort of created the roles themselves in some ways. And I think there's a little bit of a...
Yeah, I get that feeling,
you know,
too.
McManus is kind of a, you know, a dumb thug, and this guy's a little bit like this, and this guy's a little bit like that. But I think a lot of it had to do with who they cast and those particular people really adopting the role and making it what it was.
Yeah, I think that's a really great insight. I absolutely agree with that.
Lee, you're up.
Well, I was thinking of Todd Hockney as sort of the guy who has the big Napoleonic complex. Like he's really just got something to prove to everybody. And, you know, the way Kevin Pollak played him, it was, you know, sort of like George Costanza with an edge. But I went with someone sort of similar in stature, but not really well known. And I went with John Seda. And if people don't really know who he is, it's because he doesn't do a lot of leading roles. But he's played a lot of supporting roles, specifically in Primal Fear. He was Alex. 12 Monkeys, he was Jose. And he was also in some episodes of the HBO miniseries The Pacific, where he played John Bassalone. And he, similar stature, but, you know, he, a lot of times he plays sort of a thug. And I think he would have the really cold energy that would be needed for Todd Hockney.
Lee, which of those roles would you say like most points toward your picking him for this? Because I don't know him well. I you know, I looked him up on IMDb and I recognize him a little bit, but not well.
Probably 12 Monkeys.
Okay, I'll have to watch that and look out for him. I've seen that several times, but I just can't picture him at the moment.
He's the one who chases down Bruce Willis's character towards the end and says, "Hey, you know, here's a gun. You have to kill whoever. I think it's the woman, or I have to do it." You know, he's got the scar on his face. He's the one who, when they leap into World War One, he's the one that leaps there first.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah. Okay.
Huh, okay. Cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. But I like him a lot. I think he has range, and I think he has, you know, what it takes to play Todd Hockney.
Yeah, one of the things I love about this is I'm discovering new people, and I also love about how much I end up seeing them everywhere after having an awareness of them. I think that's so much fun, being like, oh, hey, there's that guy that Lee talked about. I really enjoy that.
Well, now you're going to have to watch The Pacific, and you'll see, and yeah.
I'm happy to do so. That's supposed to be quite good.
So, Kyle, I believe you're up next.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, Kevin Pollak has such a strong personality, and Jer, I think you were right on, and I think this is across all characters, but I think if you were to give a summary of these characters, it would be exactly that. It would be a summary. You know, Hockney would be kind of the quippy, goofy, sarcastic one. McManus would be the edgy, trigger happy one. You know, Dean Keaton would be the leader. Verbal Kint is the ambiguous one, which maybe should have led us to where he ended up. But, you know, so I think that, with how I would describe Hockney, the sarcastic, quippy one, I decided to go with David Cross, famous comedian, and he's done a fair amount of acting as well, in Arrested Development, most notably. He's done a few movies as well. But I think, you know, I think he has a chance to do something a little bit more edgy. Normally his edgy is just like saying controversial things, right? I mean, as a comedian, that's kind of where his strengths lie. But I think he could come off strong outside of that too, which is hard because you think of his Arrested Development character and it would have to be night and day away from that. So it's one of those things where you have to divorce from that. But he's talented. He's a really talented guy. I don't know if you guys watched Mr. Show at all, the comedy, the sketch comedy show on HBO years ago.
Yeah,
if you haven't, oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. So he just has an incredible range on that. And again, it's mostly comedic, but he takes on just dozens and dozens of roles in that and knocks them all out of the park. So that's what I was thinking with him. The only concern I had with him was the physicality of it. And admittedly, The Usual Suspects is not a huge whiz-bang action movie, but there is some there. So, you know, it would feel a little bit weird to see him shooting a machine gun, you know, like in the boat shootouts. But I think we could make it work. I think it would be okay. That was my only concern. But otherwise, I think he's great.
He does have a little cred as a voice of a soldier in Halo 2.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Kind of a whiny soldier, but still.
Wow. He's totally a whiny soldier.
I think he could, you know, I know what you mean about having him branch out and do something that's quite the opposite of what he has done in the past. I would need to see some sort of like really, I guess, violent act by his character to kind of buy into it. Like maybe something happens earlier on.
Sure.
But I like that. I can get on board with that.
Cool. Thanks.
I'm not quite convinced, but I'd love to see it.
Okay. I dig that. I appreciate that. I appreciate your openness. So in the role of Todd Hockney, originally played by Kevin Pollak, Jer chose Casey Affleck. Mark chose Adam Scott. Lee chose John Seda. And I chose David Cross. So next up in the discussion is the role of Michael McManus, originally played by Stephen Baldwin Lee. Tell us about Mr. McManus.
Well, Michael McManus is the high-strung wild card who's always looking for another high-paying score. He's cold and calculating, yet wickedly funny, and enjoys killing. But he also lives under a certain gangster code, which he demonstrates with his loyalty to Fenster. When I was thinking about this role, I was thinking of Stephen Baldwin's performance as, you know, very energetic and very unhinged. And I thought of another actor that could maybe still play it energetically, but not quite so crazy. Still ice cold, but not crazy. And I went with Guy Pearce.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cold. I like that.
Yeah, he would scare the hell out of me in that role.
Absolutely. God. Well, and I was thinking of his roles in Memento and what is it, L.A. Confidential, which, you know, to me are two of the best screenplays ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And also another really maybe not quite as known role that he did. He played Andy Warhol in the movie Factory Girl, which is about the life of Edie Sedgwick.
Right.
And he was very almost remorseless and really ice cold in that. And I thought that was just a terrific performance by him.
Yeah, I like that. One of the things, like, I like Stephen Baldwin in this role. I don't love him. It's very much his role, and I think he's kind of annoying in general. And so the character was very much like a perfect personification of him, and it made absolute sense. I think the thing that annoyed me with McManus is, like, his edginess or his trigger happiness came off as like a little too crazy. Like, I think it would be, you're waiting for him to snap, which can certainly be a strength of its own in terms of character development. But I think with this, with Guy Pearce, it would be much more calculated. Like, he would snap when he was darn well ready to snap, you know, and you knew that was an underpinning, but it would just be much brighter and much more intelligent. So yeah, I like that a lot. That's a great pick.
I agree with that. I think Stephen Baldwin's portrayal was more of a guy who was off his meds and completely unstable. Which I think was kind of a fun part of it, but I don't know if that's how the character was maybe intended.
It felt to me more like that character was supposed to be the muscle, the small-time guy that has chosen this crime lifestyle because he thinks it's really fun, but he's not a big mastermind. He's not going to pull off some big heist by himself because he has no brain for coming up with a scheme or a caper. But he's just out because he's good at it and he likes it, and that's all I can think of to do. And so that's where I come from with the character, and just that kind of dumb muscle thuggy type who happens to be a little bit high strung and sort of frantic.
Yeah, the wild card.
Yeah, I see him as a little bit deeper than that, although I think he definitely shows that that he's in it for the fun of violence. And he doesn't really want to plan things out. He wants to go in shooting. But he, to me, also shows off, this kind of emotional control over other people. Like, he's very, very confident, and he's very, very cool and calculating at the same time. Those things together make him an intriguing character for me.
When I think of the scene towards the end when they're actually on the boat, and it's him and Gabriel Byrne's character looking for the drugs. There's no dope on this boat. and he's basically going all tactical Navy SEAL. And it's like, okay, this guy isn't just a hired gun. He's obviously had some kind of training and is bringing something to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Kyle, who did you have?
Well... I like Guy Pearce better than mine, but that's all right. I'll still go. I'll still sell it as best I can. You could buy this car, but really this one's better.
We have precedent. This is okay. I can accept it.
Thank you. So I chose someone who's gotten a fair amount of attention recently. I wanted to do essentially what you did with Guy Pearce Lee, which is focus the role a little bit more, make it a little bit less crazy, a little bit less unhinged. You just picked someone that does it way better than my guy would. I chose Jeremy Renner, has been Hawkeye in the Avengers most recently. He was in the last Mission Impossible movie. He was in The Hurt Locker, which I think is the one that that got me closest to this type of role. Someone who was amongst chaos and maintained just the slightest thread of sanity, but you never quite knew when it was going to slip amongst all of this tension and all this intensity. So that was closest to where I got it. And I don't think he's done a performance that good since then, or maybe even been given a performance that good since then. So, so exactly same kind of ideas, like kind of a little bit more focused, a little bit more honed, a little bit more calculated. You know, like I think the way that McManus is on the boat is how he should be all the time. I liked seeing that Stephen Baldwin's character could get there. I think that was really cool. I just didn't like, with the exception of when they're doing the lineup and he's all like, blah, like I thought that was pretty funny. Like that was called for. But yeah, the rest of it, I wanted it to just be just a little bit more reined in. And so I thought Jeremy Renner could do it, but Guy Pearce could do it better. So yeah, good salesmanship. what do you guys think about Jeremy Renner?
I like him.
Fingers crossed for Hansel and Gretel.
Oh yeah.
Ouch. Ooh, burn.
Oh, that looks bad. Yep. Yep.
It looks deliciously bad.
Yeah, I hope he gets a little bit more. Now, admittedly, I have not seen the most recent Bourne movie, so it would be interesting to see what that turned out like for him. I thought he was a great choice for that. He has the potential for that flatness that the Bourne character requires. So I think that was seemingly a really good choice for that. I haven't seen it yet, but I'd like to. I hope he's given a little bit more chance to just not be the like pretty but not overly pretty, buff but not overly buff, like just rounded off enough action star. Yeah. He was by far my least favorite part of the Avengers. He wasn't really given a whole lot. I don't think Hawkeye is that great of a character anyways, but still you could hope that they rated in a little bit better, but that's okay. Okay. So, Jer, who did you pick for McManus?
Well, I also, kind of focused the character a little bit. I wanted to find somebody that seemed to be a little maniacal, but not so like waving their tongue around blah, 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 like he was in the lineup, like get that out of there, but somebody who can be kind of a razor's edge, but show off their crazy with more of a glare and less of a screaming. And so I went with Josh Holloway. Josh Holloway played, he's probably most well known for Sawyer in the Lost series. Mm-hmm. He's also been in a few movies since then and before then. He was supposed to play Gambit in the X-Men movies, and they trashed the character, but I thought that would have been fantastic.
Oh, really? Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yep. They basically were writing it around him, and I thought he would have been perfect.
I did enjoy Taylor Kitsch as Gambit, but
there's that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a little less wildly crazy, but a little bit more steely, I don't want to mess with you crazy, I think he would bring to that role.
Yeah, that's good. I think he would really, he would continue. I mean, like knowing the Sawyer character, you wanted to love him and then you hated him and then you loved him and then you hated him. It like went back and forth so much in Lost. And I think that would be a great, great aspect to bring into this.
Well, and I think that he would really bring that idea that I think that they wanted to portray in the McManus character, that he's really capable of anything and he is cold blooded and calculating. And I think that he could bring that to the role too, and just making the other people in the group nervous about what this guy is and where he came from and what he's done and what he could do.
Yep, totally. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. I think, you know, he did Icy Cold so well in Lost. And in addition, I really liked his character's arc throughout that whole series.
Yep, absolutely. Andy, thoughts? Anything? Am I still winning?
Moving on.
Okay. that leads us to Mark.
Well, I had darndest time casting this character, but I struck upon an odd notion. I never looked back. So I'm suggesting Anthony Anderson, who's a big black man who's tremendously funny, and he's a very, very interesting actor to me, because he really is very talented. He's, like I said, he's very funny, and he shows quite a bit of range in his resume. But you know, up until this last week, he was my favorite actor whose name I could never remember.
I love those actors, character yeah. actors. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so I mean, his resume is huge. He's had a ton of supporting roles, such as in like Me, Myself, and Irene, where he's one of Charlie's adopted. Not adopted, but he's one of the sons. He's in Transformers. He's in The Departed. My favorite. The only film that I know where he's like the actual lead character is in Kangaroo Jack.
That's where I remember him from.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
He's currently in a sitcom called Guys with Kids. And, you know, like all sitcoms these days, it's really quite funny, but it's still a sitcom. But yeah, so I think he could make McManus an edgy and slightly out of control, yet very intimidating, sort of character. I think that, Anthony Anderson can be very sinister, and he's played his share of villains. I'm not going to finish that sentence because I don't think it had an ending.
I know who.
Interesting closing argument.
Thank you.
You just sort of trailed off.
Did you fall asleep?
Yeah, he is definitely a talented actor. His character in Me, Myself, and Irene was extraordinarily funny. And it was one of those, like, he's going to go somewhere. I don't think he has. And, you know, he's one of those that I think could get shoehorned into a specific type of role and a specific type of personality. So, I think that's a good pick. I like him. I don't quite get the... I don't know that I would be scared of him like I was scared of Baldwin as McManus or like Guy Pearce would, but I think that there's potential there still in spite of that.
I think I had seen him on a few episodes of Law & Order SVU, and I didn't know if he was on any other... if he was part of any other Law & Order cast, but he did a really good job as a detective that didn't do the most ethical things. And, you know, I think that would go well. That performance could, you know, translate well into a role like this one.
Yeah. And I didn't see him in those episodes, but I mean, that's the McManus that I imagine from him.
Definitely.
All right, so in the role of Michael McManus, originally played by Stephen Baldwin, Lee chose Guy Pearce. I chose Jeremy Renner. Jer chose Josh Holloway, and Mark chose Anthony Anderson. So next, moving on, is the role of Dave Kuyan, originally played by Chaz Palminteri. U.S. Customs agent Dave Kuyan is cocky with the pedigree to back it up, but while he thinks he's in control of the situation throughout The Usual Suspects, little does he know that he's being played, and when he finds out, it's much too late.
I know there was dope on that boat.
Stop stalling, Verbal.
I'm not stalling.
You know what I'm getting
at. Get out of my face.
You know what I'm getting at.
I got immunity. I don't have to take that shit.
You know what I'm getting at, Verbal.
Yes, you do. I don't
know
what you're talking about.
The truth.
So this role I thought was a good role. I thought Chaz Palminteri was really good. I think he inhabited it very well. So much so that I could only think of just kind of him in the role. I had a hard time picking this one, but once I landed on the character, I was very happy with who I chose. The things that I was really looking at was the authority. He needed to be authoritative. I needed to see him be strong, but I needed to see him be foolish enough to, for that payoff at the end to just be in a special FU to Kuyan, you know? I mean, I think that was where it was most directed. And him running at the end, just desperate, looking around as the car drives away. So I needed somebody that could be both strong and intimidating, but at the same time could have that weakness. And I ended up going with Hugo Weaving. Him from the Matrix movies, as Agent Smith, as Elrond in the Lord of the Rings movies. He's sort of, again, thinking about typecasting, he's sort of been typecast into this sort of slow-talking, very stoic character who says meaningful things in a meaningful way. Like he's kind of like, he's like ended up being that guy. And I think he's a very versatile actor. I've seen some of his work. He's Australian. I think, right? Am I getting that right? So I've seen some of his Australian works, and they're all over the place. It's like comedy, like kind of goofy. So, I mean, he's got that in him. I think he just has been Agent Smithified far too often. Yeah. And I like his Elrond. I think he's good, but it's like it's very much time for Hugo to do something totally different. So I thought he would be good for that. I think he could be intense. I think he could, you know, sit on that desk and stare down Verbal Kint and have Verbal Kint be genuinely afraid of him and have that come across. But at the same time, I think he can show weakness in the same way. So I went with Hugo Weaving.
I'm going to take a little umbrage with that. Umbrage!
Uh-oh. Umbrage!
Just because I think it is a little on the nose from Agent Smith. I think you could literally pick up Agent Smith and drop him into this remake and not have to change anything, really.
I think this character, though, you know, would be a little bit warmer and a little bit more sympathetic than Agent Smith. If he could just ease off on that, you know, I guess robotic nature.
Let me rephrase that. If he dumped Howard Cosell as a vocal coach and picked up someone who taught him to be a little smoother or a little more natural in his
just delivery? More human. I mean, he plays a computer program in The Matrix, so I think just
but he plays in the Matrix movies, he's the only computer program who sounds like a computer.
You know? Yeah, that's true.
So I'm just saying, if he could change enough in the characterization of that, because I think you're right. I think everything else that you described about it, he would play very well, and I think he would play that getting taken moment brilliantly, which I think he's done in the Matrix movies, and like he's shown he can do that. So the challenge would be to make it not Smithed.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he has that in him. And I think he would just have to be told, don't do that. And I think he could totally do it. I just think he so often gets told, do
hey,
that.
Hey, Hugo Weaving, so, don't do that.
Don't do that, Hugo. Don't you Smith this.
Just have a rolled up newspaper and just smack him every time he does it wrong.
Bad Hugo.
Bad Hugo.
No Smith.
Now do Smith, but in Elvish.
Look at those sideburns. Oh, man. All right. Well, on that note, Mark, who did you pick for Kuyan?
Sorry, still laughing at the Smith jokes. I was looking for exactly the same things out of Kuyan, where you need an actor that can be intense, intimidating, but still be kind of warm and human and approachable. It's a lot to ask. I think Chaz Palminteri did it really, really well. I think my guy's gonna do it just as well. So I picked John Leguizamo, who sadly he might be most recognizable as the voice of Sid in the Ice Age movies.
But you know what, though? Honestly, I think most people don't know that's him. Which I think is to his credit.
Yeah, that speaks to his strengths.
So. I mean, he's a tremendously versatile actor and tremendously funny, as he shows off in the Ice Age movies. But he also played Henri Toulouse-Lautrec in Moulin Rouge. He was fantastic in that.
While walking on his knees.
Yes. Navy SEAL in Executive Decision.
Mm-hmm. And Romeo and Juliet.
Wait, what? Jared, did you just drop Executive Decision?
I believe this is the second podcast in a row that I've dropped that movie.
Is Executive Decision the new Sahara?
It's Jared's Band of Brothers.
I was just going to say that.
I like it.
Wow.
Sorry, Lee.
But yeah, so I think John Leguizamo's role in Romeo and Juliet as Tybalt is kind of what I was queuing in on. I mean, it's not exactly the same, actually not the same at all, but he shows off this kind of ferocity and a ton of expression. And I think that calm that down a little bit, put it in a suit, and I think you've got a really, really deep, engaging investigator character.
That's our first Baz Luhrmann reference, I'm pretty sure.
Is it? I think, I'll make
this.
More.
There's been Moulin Rouge references before. Nicole
That's
Kidman
true.
Oh, you're right, you're
was
right,
mentioned
right.
in okay. that regard. Yep.
I retract.
Yep. I will always see him as Benny Blanco from the Bronx in Carlito's Way.
Nice. Yeah, yep. I think he fought for a long time to fight against that, kind of Latino Brooklynite. And he's certainly done that. I mean, now, like, you know, Mark, when you said it, I looked him up on IMDb, and his top credit is for Ice Age. So I think you are spot on with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great pick. And I think he would be, he wouldn't have the gravitas, shall we say, that like Chaz Palminteri has or that someone older has, but I think he could be just a little bit more unhinged, a little bit more like this guy could snap and smash his coffee mug in my face. So I think the fear aspect of that could still be there, just in a different way, which I think is could bring a good different energy to that.
When you said John Leguizamo, the first thing that popped into my mind was his role in Spawn.
Yes.
Where he was just evil looking. But the more I think about it, I think your reference to Tybalt is actually better. I think that's more for this character what would be called for.
Thank you. But let us to move on to Lee.
Thanks. When I was thinking of this role, you know, considering Kyle's pick and Mark's pick, they seem to get a little warmer with each one. And I think my approach to it was finding someone who was a lot more approachable than Chaz Palminteri. And sticking with my whole Band of Brothers thing, I went with Damian Lewis.
More recently of Homeland.
Yep. Which he just won a Golden Globe for.
Yeah. Nice. Great speech, too. Excellent speech. Very warm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, fine orator.
Yes, from England. And I, you know, his role in Band of Brothers was, it's one of the central characters of the entire story. In fact, the book is sort of written from that guy's point of view. And he also played a detective in the show Life, which I think I've referenced before. And his character in that is, you know, a little bit quirky, but still very warm and likable. And also, as a detective, an LA detective, he does some questionable things at times. But I think he'd make a great Dave Kuyan.
All right.
I like anyway. That. I haven't seen Home. I actually don't know this guy's work very much. I've just, you know, I watched the Golden Globes recently, and I know that Homeland's been everywhere from the Emmys to the Golden Globes. And so I don't know him too much, but he seems like, just from what I know about the characters he's played thus far and just kind of his personality overall, I think that's a good choice. Would you ask him to be English or to be American?
I would have him flatten out his accent and be American just for this role. I think he does a flawless American accent. In fact, I didn't even know he was British until I saw an interview post Band of Brothers. So I thought he was an American.
I always love those moments.
Yeah.
When Christian Bale spoke at the Golden Globes, both Kate and I were like, wait a minute. I totally forgot he's not Batman. Nice.
Thank you.
Oh boy, never live that down, old Christian.
Yeah, we'll have to dub that in. So Jer, who do you have?
Well, I went I guess maybe a different direction, but I wanted to kind of find that hard edge, feeling like he's in control of the whole situation when reality is not. And especially at the end when he's sort of figuring it out in his head and then realizes that he's just been played. I went with John Cusack.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So I just think that he would play that almost world-weary agent that's been around the block, that's made his collars, that's made his name for himself and everything else, and now he's come up with this case that seems kind of cut and dry, but the more he digs into it, the more he realizes that there's something else going on here, and starting to get frustrated because he's getting stumped, and then he thinks he knows what's going on, and then everything is sort of turning in inside itself. And I just think he would do a lot of good emotional turmoil with that role while still being that hard ass gumshoe cop trying to intimidate Verbal Kenton.
I'm not quite convinced that that he could be as fearsome as I would want Kuyan to be, but I really do like his dramatic acting.
Yep, I think he can do just about everything, but I don't know that I would be intimidated by him necessarily. I think he's a great actor. I just don't think he's scary. I just don't think he's a scary guy. Like, what a great thing to be able to say about someone. Sorry, John Cusack, you're not scary. Like, I think that's perfectly
okay. Give me a hug.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he can play drama really well. I mean, like High Fidelity. I mean, that's not all hugs and smooches and rainbows, but...
Yeah, or like a Identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did a great job in that.
Great example. Yep, absolutely. What was the one about Hitler as an artist too? Is it Max? I think he was good in that too. Oh. So you know he's got dramatic chops. He just doesn't have like intimidating chops to me. That would be my only concern. So there, take that, Jer.
That's all. I have no rebuttal, but it's still the best pick.
We appreciate that confidence.
I'll I'm be the judge of that.
It's true. Judgy Andy will preside over this later. All right. So in the role of Dave Kuyan, originally played by Chaz Palminteri, I chose Hugo Weaving. Mark chose John Leguizamo. Lee chose Damian Lewis. And Jer chose John Cusack. So next, the fourth of five, so we'll be here for about another 6 days. This is a good conversation, is the role of Dean Keaton, originally played by Gabriel Byrne. Dean Keaton was a bad cop gone good, or possibly a bad cop who stayed bad. The leader of the ragtag group of criminals, or so he thinks, seems to be on the straight and narrow, but he can't seem to shake his old habits, and it costs him first his freedom and eventually his life.
This whole thing was a shakedown.
What makes you say that?
How many times you been in the lineup? It's always you and four dummies. PD are paying homeless guys $10 a head half the time. And there's no way they'd line five felons in the same row. No way. And what's a vice lineup? Public defender could get you out of that one.
So why the hell was I a strip search?
It was the feds. A truckload of guns get snagged. Customs comes down on top of NYPD looking for answers. They come up with us.
So the role of Dean Keaton has to be someone that you all along, well, not all along, you have to eventually think that he is Kaiser Soze. So you have to basically say, yep, this guy can be a master criminal. You have to agree along with Kuyan and along with Verbal that this is somebody who could carry that level of malice, who could carry that level of evil, who could be that guy. So no matter what he's portrayed in the rest of his role, you have to trust that he could be that evil. Because if you don't trust that, you can't buy into him being Kaiser Soze. So that is ultimately the first thing that he has to be. He has to have potential for that strength and that evil. And my choice, I don't see him as an evil guy, but I think he can do just about anything. And he has that strength. And I think some of his characters, one especially that I'll touch on, can speak to that very strongly. And that is Hugh Jackman. You know, Dean Keaton needs to be, he's not a young guy, but he's not an old guy. He needs to be kind of in that, you know, middle-aged and not a pejorative way, right? And, you know, middle-aged in a way where he's mature, he's come a long way. You know, Dean Keaton is a cop that went bad, supposedly. He's done some time in prison. He's world-weary, but then he's trying to make himself better, supposedly, but then you don't really trust that. So, you know, I think Hugh Jackman can do both good and trustworthy, like you're buying into him maybe trying to better himself, but he can also have that background to it. And the role that I spoke of was Wolverine. So you know, I think, you know, Wolverine just runs the gamut from good guy with a heart of gold or adamantium in this case, but but at the same time, like he is vicious and he's fueled by this rage that he has. So I went with Hugh Jackman.
Nice.
I do like him. He's one of those guys who can play anything, in my opinion. So I like him a lot.
I like his character in Swordfish as a reference for this character.
Oh yeah,
interesting.
Yep. Yeah, I mean he's a in that one he's a criminal, and he's you know basically trying to lead a pretty simple straight life. He's you know basically got a good heart and is the hero of the movie, but you know is still a criminal doing criminal things. I think Hugh Jackman did a great job in that one.
I could see a lot of his character from The Prestige coming out in this role.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a great source as well.
Good references. Andy. Reference buddies.
Reference pals. Referencers. Andy, it seemed as though you had Umbridge, Captain Umbridge. What's up?
Umbridge!
Umbridge! I don't know. It's... There's the original portrayal of Dean Keaton to me by Gabriel Byrne, which I think is masterful. That when you talked a little bit about it, when we mentioned John Cusack, that he's very world weary. He seemed in this movie from start to finish. The thing that I remember most distinctly about Gabriel Byrne's portrayal is that Dean Keaton always seems tired. Like he always just seems worn down from this life that he seems to have tried to escape that just keeps catching up with him. That I don't know if there's something about that. Hugh Jackman to me seems too, like he's too superhero-y, which is trademark copyright Andy Wicks, 2013, superhero-y. That he just, I don't know, that he's too handsome. He's too strong. He's too Wolverine. That Wolverine never to me seemed like weary as much as he seemed pissed off. Where to me, Dean Keaton seems to be need a little more like, come on, guys, I'm just trying to get out of this racket and I can't, you know, trouble just follows me wherever I go. Kind of a thing, if that makes sense.
Makes sense.
I think that also can undermine your thinking that he could be Kaiser Sose, though. And I think that Gabriel Byrne could have dialed that back just a little bit.
But,
I mean, ultimately, Kaiser Sose is the ultimate chameleon, right?
So but that's the thing, because it's like that to me was also the most brilliant portrayal of, is this guy the thing? Because that portrayal makes you start doing the whole, oh, he's the last person you suspect. Therefore, he's the first person you suspect. But no, he's the last person. So it, like, because he gets your mind spinning like that, to me was what worked for me.
I see. Yep, that makes sense. So you could vacillate. You could say, well, he could be, but I don't know.
Okay. The greatest trick the devil pulled was to convince the world he didn't exist.
Yep.
See? There you go.
There you go.
Nice read, Velma.
Jerry, you just went down a couple spots, all right?
Nice. Nice. So Jer, now that you've officially taken yourself out of the rankings by shaming the judge, who did you pick for Dean Keaton?
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter.
I went with one of my favorite actors that is now sort of in the scene, Josh Brolin.
Oh.
I could see a very similar, like he has a very nice ability to appear in control, be a leader. I could see him being kind of the go-to leader role in this group of ragtag criminals that are thrown together, but also he brings like Andy was saying, he brings a lot of that world weariness, that just tired. I just want to get out of here and I want to start a new life. But then you start to wonder about him and kind of that, oh wait, maybe he is the Kaiser Soze, or maybe he's not. And I think that he's such a great versatile actor that I think he could bring a lot of subtle nuance to that role.
I totally agree. Like I think we've seen that from him in the film Milk.
Yep.
He's a politician who's just kind of getting slowly beat down and just kind of is becoming slowly more unhinged. And I think that's exactly what he could bring to the Keaton role and make it really, really work.
Boy, that's a good reference. I needed that. Like he did such a good job of.
I too need some milk.
Milk break.
It's good for your bones.
Let's take a milk break.
Oh, nice. Anybody got any cookies? So his impersonation of his inhabiting of the Tommy Lee Jones character in Men in Black 3. I didn't even see the movie. I just had it from the trailer, which is like 11 seconds, if that. But it was so spot on that all I can picture him is basically like Tommy Lee Jones-isms in my mind right now. And I need to see more of his stuff to escape that a little bit. And I think that's what I needed. That's a great reference. Milk was my favorite movie of that year. I just thought that was masterful. I thought that was so, so incredibly well done. Mm-hmm. So I need to revisit that. Actually, that's been a long time. So, okay. I'm back there. I'm getting there with
Mark,
Mr. Roland.
You did yourself some favors.
Thank you.
There.
Thank you.
And let's not forget his performance in The Goonies.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Genius.
That
should be the clincher.
That's going way right there. Back.
Yep, that it is.
And another thing about Josh Brolin is Andy is really handsome.
Keep it coming. Keep it coming.
Good work. Good work.
Oh, sorry. That's me, isn't it? I'm going to pass the baton over to Mark.
as we lose the relay race.
You're running backwards.
Okay, so for my Keaton, I was really looking for the very, very Gabriel Byrne characteristic of being able to be kind of scruffy and roughed up and still look really classy.
Man, he just doesn't look bad, does he?
Yeah, you can never make Gabriel Byrne look bad. I don't know what it is, but so it made this character really hard to cast for me. Because honestly, how many guys can you say that? But I think I've got one in Simon Baker, who I think most people recognize from the TV show The Mentalist. But he's had a number of good leading roles, like Land of the Dead.
You know, I was just watching an episode of that in the background last night, in fact, and I was thinking to myself, he looks good in a vest.
He does look good in the vest.
Not too many guys you can... Actually, you know what? I like vests. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I like vests.
I got one for Christmas, and I just look for excuses to wear it.
I am right there with you. Although I have a couple sweater vests I really like. I don't have like a full button vest, which I think that'll be next to my repertoire.
It's worth the investment, Kyle.
Okay. Indeed it is.
Deal. All right. Soon.
Yeah. Very Simon soon. Baker's tell you.
Nice.
This might be my last podcast, you guys.
This will gently trend into like vest makers, Mark, and we'll talk about vest fashions.
We should talk Simon to Jesse Baker Thorne, see if we can get on his coattails and
get on put this on. Yeah, we'll see what we can do. Mark, I think that's really good. I didn't know him by name, but then when I looked him up and when you mentioned The Mentalist, I haven't watched the show much, but yeah, I think he would get both the strength of Gabriel Byrne, but also the vulnerability of him. So yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and I don't think he's got quite the acting chops of Gabriel Byrne, but then again, that doesn't say very much. I think he definitely brings that same sort of gravitas where you will immediately imagine that he is the leader of the group and that he brings the initiative and the brains. Yeah, I think that has to be you need to get that from Keaton.
My umbrage from that one, which is...
Umbrage.
It's slight. It's more of just umbrage. Is that he seems too young. That if you
really?
I don't know. There's something about Gabriel Byrne's portrayal that he seems... I think it was someone mentioned it. He seems... Like the experienced, you know, managerial level, like the guy has been around. He knows what he's doing. He seems like he's worked his way up enough to be a leader. I'm not saying this how I'm sounding in my head, but
it's the end of his life of crime, not the beginning.
Yeah. And Simon Baker, right. Although I like everything else you said about it, there's just, if they could make him appear older in the movie, then I think I would buy it more.
Yeah, I think they definitely can. I mean, he's no spring chicken.
I hear they have makeup in movies these days.
Well, yes. Indeed, he's no chicken of any sort.
You're right. And actually, as I look at his IMDb page, he is older than I thought he would be, but still. I am the judge, so I say.
Last word, Andy.
You guys got to try this. This is really fun, by the way.
I like this. We might have to make this somewhat of a permanent fixture. We'll have to.
Me being the judge? This. Yeah, I'm into that.
No, not just you.
No.
Power drunk, Wickles.
It's so true. I'm power drunk.
Lee, you're up on the block.
All right. Well, my pick, I was trying to think of someone who plays anti-hero really well, because that's kind of what Dean Keaton is. To this group of characters, he's the anti-hero. You know, he's Travis Bickle, Sonny Wurzik. I'm running out of characters from the 70s, but I decided to go with Christian Bale, thinking of his roles in The Machinist and The Fighter. And, you know, even Bruce Wayne isn't squeaky clean. So, I think he can play both sides of the law really well. He can play sketchy really well. And he can play that person who's really trying to do the right thing. And he's one of my favorites. So, Christian Bale.
Yeah, I think referencing Bruce Wayne is spot on. I loved his Bruce Wayne. I thought he was probably my favorite Bruce Wayne of any of the modern Batman actors. You know, Michael Keaton.
I agree.
Michael Keaton had his own energy with him, which was like that kind of nervous, twitchy, and I thought that was really interesting. But it doesn't hold a candle to what Bale did with that. All the other ones are kind of crappy Bruce Waynes. But I think you could almost like kind of pull Bruce Wayne out of that in terms of like scheming, power. Good guy gone bad or bad guy gone good. Equally well. You never quite know which one it is. So I think that's right on. I like that.
I like that too. I think the difference would be that Christian Bale's portrayal of Bruce Wayne, this is an odd reference that we're making here, but he relied a little bit on his looks. There's definitely moments where he had kind of the sly poop eating grin kind of, he knew he was rich and powerful and handsome, where I didn't see that in the Dean Keaton character, but I agree when you say that he was, by no means was he squeaky clean. I think anyone who had that much power, even if he wasn't a superhero, probably had to do some underhanded things to get there.
Right.
To some degree. So I like that reference in that sense.
And I don't know if any of you have seen The Machinist, but
I always wanted to, haven't seen it.
It's one of his best performances.
It's extraordinary. Yeah.
It's very good. Very good.
And the physical transformation of that is, I would say, unparalleled. He weighs like 118 pounds or something. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like how skinny he is. More than the Tom Hanks Castaway transformation?
I would say probably significantly more.
Really?
He honestly, he looked like a Holocaust victim.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Not a joke.
Yeah. Yep. I don't think that's an exaggeration at all. All right. Good picks, y'all. So in the role of Dean Keaton, originally played by Gabriel Byrne, I chose Hugh Jackman, Jer chose Josh Brolin, Mark chose Simon Baker, and Lee chose Christian Bale. So finally, we're up to the big one. The role of Verbal Kint, originally played by Kevin Spacey. Mark, tell us about old Verbal.
Indeed. Who is the Gimp? Why, it's Verbal Kint. He and Keaton met once or twice. Last time was in county. Verbal walked. 90 days suspended. As the only survivor and least usual of the suspects, Verbal serves as the narrator of the story via police interview. Crippled and nonviolent, he seems out of place in the team of criminals and remains a mystery. In the end, perhaps the most we can say is that Verbal is the man with the plan.
That guy is tense. Tension is a killer. I used to be in a barbershop quartet in Skokie, Illinois. The baritone was this guy named Kip Diskin. Big fat guy. I mean, like orca fat. He was so stressed in the morning,
Verbal, we're trying to help you.
Sure, and I appreciate that. And I want to help you, Agent Kuyan.
Yeah, how to recast this one.
How do you recast an Oscar winner?
Yeah. Kevin Spacey did such an amazing job. And it's his role. And saying that, when I tried to recast, I came up with one person immediately and really never looked back. I tried others, but really he was the one for me. And that person is Peter Sarsgaard.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, we'll know Peter Sarsgaard from many, many things, but really excellent movies like An Education and Kinsey, and more lighthearted films like Garden State and The Green Lantern. But he's an excellent actor, and has a really huge range, and I think can bring that kind of greasiness that can really make an intriguing Verbal.
I think that's one of the. I would actually, even though you said it was lighthearted, I would go back to Garden State as a reference, because his character in that movie is kind of slimy, and like he operates in this underworld that exists in this otherwise, relatively lighthearted movie, and it's a little bit of a twist because he's doing it for, a noble goal in that movie, but he's like, he's just never, you never really know what's going on with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's a good, and the same thing with An Education, that his in a slightly different way, that the twist on that one is so, or is such that you're just like, oh, he's so evil. Erg. Anyway.
Good arg.
Thank you.
Well played.
Yeah, I think, you know, Kevin Spacey played the sliminess perfectly, and I think Peter Sarsgaard's sliminess factor would be right on with that, and maybe even more so, to the part where you maybe even, like, distrust him a little bit, which I think could either be beneficial or could be harmful, too, at the same time. Like, you ultimately have to believe what he's saying. You know, there's so many, like, revisionist things when you go back and watch The Usual Suspects. The first thing you see of Verbal Kint when he's sitting in the office is him just looking around the office, which, if you've never seen it before, seems totally innocuous. It just seems like, well, he's waiting for somebody to come in, and what do? You look around, you know, and it's just like you're gauging the scene. But then later on, you're like, oh, he's building his story. He's getting all these things to make up, to essentially improv this whole story. And it's just brilliant. And when you see that again, it's like, aha, I like that. That's great. And I think, you know, I think Sarsgaard wouldn't give up the ghost with that too much. You would get a little slimy, but not so much that you would distrust him totally.
Lee, what do you have to say about Verbal?
Well, I wanted to find a character or an actor who could really make you feel sorry for him and could generate a lot of pity and yet make you feel like a complete fool when you find out he's been playing you this entire time. And who can also bring the physicality to the role that I think is necessary for Verbal Kint. And I immediately picked Edward Norton.
Oh, yeah.
Just thinking of Primal Fear, Fight Club, American History X. I just think, you know, he's the obvious choice for me.
He does seem kind of, there's something about him that makes the natural progression seem very natural.
Mm-hmm. And I think he could do really well telling the story, you know, how the, it's essentially just told from Verbal's point of view. And I think he could tell that story really well as he's, you know, fooling everybody.
Yeah. I think Kevin Spacey was established in terms of being an actor, but he was not established as a star, to my understanding, before this. So you didn't really know him too well. I think having too recognizable or too established of a face in this role might be you're looking at the actor and not the role. Whereas with Kevin Spacey, I feel now, back then, I think you were looking entirely at the role. And I fear that that would get lost a little bit with Edward Norton, that you would be looking at him and saying, like, okay, Edward Norton is doing Edward Norton-y things, no matter how good the performance is. And I think he could be really good. I just fear that if you get somebody that's too established, you think too much about that person and put too much onto the character of Verbal Kint when it really needs to be a total blank slate coming in. So I think that would be my only umbrage, if you will, with the pick. But he's a talented actor, and I think he could totally do it. I just fear that it would be Edward Norton's Verbal Kint instead of just Verbal Kint.
I could go along with that. I think that I would have a similar sentiment.
Okay. With that, Kyle, I believe you're up next. I hope yours is better.
Ooh,
we got some big ones this time.
I think it might be. These are all really good picks. I'm super happy about these. So I'd want to go chameleon-like, but it needed to be somebody who is, I think the vulnerability of Verbal makes you care for the character so much. You know, like the scene where Keaton punches him in the gut and he says, I'm going to blood tomorrow. You know, it's just like you see this guy who, you know, does bad things and admits to doing bad things, going to jail. He rats on people, you know, but somehow at the same time, he's protected from on high and you don't quite know why. So he really runs the gamut, but ultimately he is vulnerable. And so you have to like him. And the character needs to have that aspect to it. So it can't just be like totally evil. This can't be like this dastardly Snidely Whiplash character that's like, villain, totally the villain. It has to be someone that you have to be surprised that it's him. And the chameleon that I came up with, and this was the first person that I picked, was Sam Rockwell. I think he's an
now
extraordinary
you're playing the
actor. I didn't even know that it was going to happen then, but I'm happy to have done so. He can do anything. I mean, he's an actor that can and has done anything. He can be vulnerable. he can be bombastic. You can mm-hmm. believe that he would, you know, murder his family, but at the same time, you would feel bad for him that he has this limp and that he can't light a lighter. You know, I mean, there's he could do everything that the character would require. And I think you can make it his own, too. And that's one thing that we have to think about with the remake is, like, how do you not just ape what came before, but make it its right. own movie, too? So it would have to be, it'd have to be a new verbal Kent while respecting the previous one. So I think his would do both of those things.
Can't argue with that.
I like him too. Yeah.
I can't argue, but I would lose.
Thanks. He's reminded me of a younger Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Gary is awesome. That is spot on.
Gary younger. Yeah, there you go.
Just in his style of acting and also the way he looks.
Yeah, that's right on. Yep. I like that. All right. So finally, Jer, who did you pick for verbal?
Well, as much as I like your pick, I still like mine as well. Ooh, maybe equally. It is a little bit of a wild card out of left field pick, but I chose Jackie Earle Haley.
Ooh.
For the role. Like you said, Kyle, I was looking for somebody that could very simultaneously be very meek and very sympathetic, but then also at the end when you realize what happened, that's just gone, and it's cold, calculating, not maybe evil is a little bit more than what you need, but just that cold, calculating. He was in control the whole time, and so I think about a couple different roles of his. Obviously, Rorschach from The Watchmen is probably his most notable, but he won quite a few awards for an earlier role. I don't know if you guys saw Little Children.
Mm-hmm. It was great. Hard to watch, but very good.
Very hard to watch, but he was very good. And he's been in some other things too. He had a minor role in Shutter Island and a minor role in
Dark Shadows. A couple
other different things. Dark Shadows. He was in Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. He was great in Lincoln.
And so, yep. So
he also has cameos in MacGyver and Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, he was around long ago, yeah. And then he had that comeback with Little Children and Watchmen.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see him being a sympathetic sort of beat on character, and then at the end realizing that, oh, wait a minute, I was dead wrong. Mm.
That is a wonderful picture.
Yep.
Why, thank you.
It's funny. So I put out a call to Twitter just to see who people might pick in general, but especially verbal. And someone, as I've been sitting here, Josh Freeman picked Jackie Earle Haley. So you are amongst good company in saying that, as is Josh.
I don't know who he is, but I like
smart man.
I like this kid.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like Sam Rockwell, but I really like Jackie Earle Haley too. Man, that's tough. I think that would be one of those performances where when it gets announced, like all of the kind of like famous character actors would just like be like, that's the one, I have to have that. And I could see them getting down to the last two for that.
I would watch either one of those two movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be like how there was Mars Attacks and Mission to Mars. So it would be two Usual Suspects movies, one with Sam Rockwell and one with Jackie Earle Haley that were somehow
different.
Are you
talking different. About Red Planet.
What did I say?
Mission to Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks is that.
The Tim Burton.
Yeah, sorry. Those are entirely different. Yes. Red Planet and Mission to Mars. And then there's Mars Attacks too, but that's a whole different story. Wow. Okay.
Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Yep, totally. Yeah. Yep. Well, good one, Jer. I like that. So again, for the big role of the movie, Roger Verbal Kent, originally played by Kevin Spacey. Mark chose Peter Sarsgaard. Lee chose Edward Norton. I chose Sam Rockwell, and Jer chose Jackie Earle Haley. So wow, that was
good
fun.
Picks
so those
for that
are
one.
Yeah, for all around, I'm really happy with how those were all cast. So before we finish up here, we do have some minor characters we want to look at as well. There were three minor characters that we wanted to not short here. The first of which is Edie Finneran. Lee, do you want to talk about that and say who you chose to recast Edie's role?
Sure. Edie Finneran is the only person who believes in Dean Keaton's good side. While she's an effective lawyer, she doesn't stand a chance in this dark underworld he unwittingly drags her into. tragically, she becomes a casualty in Keaton's failed attempt to go legit. My pick for this one, you know, Edie Finneran doesn't, she's not in the movie very much, and it's, I think she has maybe one or two scenes, so she doesn't have a whole lot to do. But I went with someone who hasn't been in a lot of things, but the things that I have seen her in, I've really liked her. And I went with Brooke Langton. If you don't know that name, I'm not surprised. She was in the TV show The Net when that was on in the 90s, a very short-lived TV adaptation of the movie. And she was in Swingers as a girl that the main character picks up at the bar. And she was also in the TV show Life with Damian Lewis, coincidentally. And she played his lawyer.
Wow, tying it in. Nice.
Damn right.
Yeah. The original actress, Susie Amis, I'm not sure, A-M-I-S, I recognized her, but I don't know what she's done, you know? So I think that, you know, having somebody that's a little bit unheard of, you know, after breaking your bank on all of these top five huge characters, we're probably not going to be left a lot of money to cast Edie Finneran in our remake. Right. Joe Hollywood is probably not going to be that generous. So, yeah, I think that's a good pick. I like that. I didn't know much about her, but looking through, I see who she is and I recognize that name. So, yeah.
I like that pick.
Cool. And I think Mark had something to say about Kobayashi.
Indeed. Kobayashi is introduced as a lawyer in the film, but more importantly, gives voice to the darkness, acting as messenger and mouthpiece for Kaiser Soze. It is through Kobayashi that we first learn anything about Soze, and the emotionless and expressionless Kobayashi provides an ominous presence for him. I think that emotionless and expressionless really, really makes the character work for me. Kobayashi was originally played by Pete Postlethwaite, and he does a fantastic job. So I think keying in on that really, really flat, really matter-of-fact sort of delivery, I went with William H. Macy to play him in the remake.
I like that.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, it's a different sort of feel. Yeah, just I imagine him just giving that really just plain, upfront delivery.
You're kind of thinking of William H. Macy from, was it The Cooler?
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting that title right?
That's the one where he's the gambler who causes everybody to lose money.
Yeah. And he's just kind of just flat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a, you would not necessarily take him very seriously. I think it would be ironic, and I think you would take him seriously, but you feel like you shouldn't.
Yeah, it could be. So the Pete Postlethwaite performance is like kind of scary and very creepy. Like one of the first times you see him, he is standing in the room with these criminals who, you know, have sixth senses of their own as essentially master criminals. And he's just standing in the back of the room and no one knows he's there. Right. Yeah. So from the moment you see him, he is above them somehow, and you don't quite know. And they focus on him. They show him standing there while they're talking. They cut back to him. He doesn't interrupt. He's just there. And they know how to stage a crime, and they have no idea that this guy's there. So from the first impression, he is totally uncertain and totally creepy. And then he establishes himself and his client as this, you know, power duo, power couple, whatever, who now essentially owns them. And I think William H. Macy could provide that strength without the creepy. I think it could seem like, wait, who is this guy? But then would be the payoff when they're looking through those files saying like, oh my God, they have everything on me. You know, then you see like, okay, this is no one to be trifled with.
He's Pete Postlethwaite plays that one. He's just omniscient and omnipresent. And it's just, that's the power to it, is the fact that I think he's so, it's almost as if he's not even, the activities of these people are so below him, he's not even willing to engage with it. Any more than he has to. Like, that's how far above it he is.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I interpreted that. So, I like your pick.
Thank you. Jer, hit me with some Fred Fenster.
Before we jump into that, I just want to say a little bit about Fenster. That's all right. Sorry, I totally bogarted that one. So Fenster was one that we really had a hard time with. Like, Benicio del Toro's performance was outstanding, right? I mean, he that made him as an actor.
Indeed. And it was something.
Yeah, and it was hard not to choose him as a major character, but there are so many strong characters in here. And it was mostly just due to time constraints. Again, I kind of joked about being here for 6 days. This is a little bit of a longer one, but I think it's worthwhile given the number and strength of major characters. Fenster was given strength in terms of the majorness of his role by Del Toro's performance, but the role itself was not a major role. He gets killed off more quickly. He is memorable because of the performance, not because of the role. So ultimately we chose him as a minor character. So I think we'll probably get a little feedback about that, but I just wanted to kind of give a little reasoning behind that. So Jer, who did you pick for that role?
Well, I think Benicio del Toro-ing the role, notwithstanding, I think that the character of Fenster seemed to me to be attempting to the intention behind it was to be kind of a more of a slick guy, kind of a small time. I imagine him. He's probably living large. He's got the nice suits and whatnot. And he's not, his hands aren't quite as dirty as the rest of these guys. Or if they are, they're dirty in a different way. He's, selling watches and stolen cars or whatever. And he's not out killing drug dealers or anything. That's at least how I perceive the character. And then, obviously getting it Del Toro'd, added a whole new layer to it. So I kind of took the Del Toro out of it and wanted to find somebody who was going to be kind of that slimy, fancy suit wearing guy that's a little slick, but also kind of bring a little bit of his own flair to it. So I went with Norman Reedus. You may know him from the Boondock Saints movies as well as Greasy Swamp Guy from the Walking Dead series on AMC.
Yep.
He's so dreamy. So
that's awesome. But, I like that a lot.
I think that he would bring a different flair to it than the Del Toro mumbling, just bizarreness that he brought. And you're not going to be able to duplicate that, and you shouldn't. But I think he would bring a different type of energy and quirkiness to that character.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I like that pick a lot. It would definitely be different, and I think that's totally called for. I think you're right on in saying that it can't just be a Del Toro impression. It would have to be something completely different. I think he would be really good, and he would capture that energy of that character really well.
Mm-hmm.
So with Fenster, we also decided, although he's not a major character as discussed, we decided that we wanted to pick, considering the lineup was the poster, right? The scene of them standing in front of the lineup at the police station was the poster. That was a big part of the movie. That was the first time they all came together. We wanted to have one of our picks be who had the best ensemble. So part of what we do here is we vote on who had the best character choices overall, individually, etc. And so we wanted to pick best ensemble too. So with that, we all chose someone who we would pick as Fenster. So we're not going to go into why we picked them. We're just going to say who they are and why we picked them from what type of roles and personality wise. So for my role of Fenster, my choice was James Franco. I think he, y'all know James Franco. He's been in a million things. I think he's weird enough to put his own spin on the role to get that weird energy. And it would sort of be, again, not an impression, but something where it's his own role, but just a bit off. So that's why I chose James Franco. Lee, who did you go with?
I went with Mark Ralston, who is a character actor who always seems to play an antagonist, but he does it really well. He was in Lethal Weapon 2 very briefly. He played Boggs in The Shawshank Redemption. And in The Departed, funny coincidence, he played Dale Hunt.
Hey, guy after my own heart. Well done.
That's right.
It's too bad I'm not the judge. And then, Mark, who did you choose for Fenster?
I picked John Turturro for my Fenster.
Oh, man.
Basically, he's a... He plays the best Weasley characters ever.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Don't mess with the Jesus. All right. So those were our Fenster picks. So to reiterate the minor characters, the role of Edie Finneran, Lee chose Brooke Langton. In the role of Kobayashi, Mark chose William H. Macy. In the role of Fred Fenster, Jer chose Norman Reedus. And then in our second picks, I chose James Franco. Lee chose Mark Ralston. And Mark chose John Turturro. So that is our first part of our discussion of The Usual Suspects. So that was a lot of fun. There's some great choices there. And, you know, Andy, you've got some tough work ahead of you. I look forward to hearing the deliberation when we close up shop here. Oof. But thanks for acting as judge. I'm sure I'll hate you for it, but know that I love you regardless. So,
I know.
Thanks to all the listeners who stuck with us here. There's been a lot of fun. So as I mentioned, casting, we will convene here after the recording here to talk about what picks won, who had the best pick. So, and usually we decide that as a committee of sorts, as a team. In this case, Andy is the team, so go team Andy. And then that will determine who gets to pick the next movie that we will discuss, which will be the winning characters will be revealed, as well as the next movie we will discuss in the second half of the Usual Suspects conversation, which will be released on February 11th. So keep your eyes and ears and podcast clients open for that. Just to remind you that you can check us out at mathishard.net. You can find show notes, so you can find out information about all these actors. Like I said, there are a lot of names here that I didn't know, and I'm very happy to know them now. So if some of these weren't familiar, just hop open to the show notes page. It's attached to all of the episodes, so you can just see it right from your podcast client or iTunes or whatever, so you can get there from there or via the website itself. And that's a great way to find out a little bit more about the podcasting network, the Math is Hard Network, and our other shows like Nerd Night Minnesota as well. So definitely do that. So gentlemen, as always, thanks for your great picks and for your time here, and may the force be with you.
And also with you.